Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who travels so he can pretend he's on the lam, Pete Chwaba.
Hey, welcome back to Nightlight. Great to have you with me on this Thursday night. Broadcasting live throughout the state of Wisconsin from beautiful downtown Green Bay at City Deck Landing at WGBW. Great to have you with me. Still lots to come at 8:35. Maestro Alexander Platt will be here. I've never knowingly spoken with a maestro, so I'm excited about that. But I'm really excited right now because I've wanted to have this guy on for a while. He is a legendary stand-up comedian. You know him as Tom Dreesen. Tom, welcome to Nightlight.
Pete. It's nice to talk to you, and let me tell you how I became a legend. All my critics are dead.
Did you have anything to do with that? Don't say anything, Tom.
No, I refuse to answer on the grounds. It might incriminate me. I'll plead the fifth on that.
All right, beautiful. It's so great to have you here, Tom. And I have about 8,000 questions for you and not nearly enough time. So I'll just ask you first, before we get into some of the things you have going on, how did you get your start, whether it was with Tim Reed as a team or as an individual with stand-up comedy?
No, it was definitely with Tim Reed. Tim Reed and I became America's first black and white comedy team. History shows we were the last. But I had never been on stage before, nor did I want to be on stage. And wow. I met Tim, and we were helping grade school children learn about the ills of drug abuse with humor. It was a concept we had. We were in a civic group called the JCs. So anyhow, one day a little eighth grade girl said, "You guys are funny. You ought to become a comedy team." And the thought of a black-white comedy team intrigued us because no one had ever done that before. So we became America's first black and white comedy team. We stayed together 6 years. And then Tim wanted to be more of an actor, and the team split up, and that's when I went on my own.
Wow. So that young, that's incredible, Tom. You guys, okay, so you go on your own. Where did you work? Did you start in Chicago?
Yes. You know, that's where I was living at the time. I started doing stand-up there, and then I came out to the West Coast because at that time, in 1975, Tim Reed and I stayed together from 1969 to like early 75. When the team split up and I decided to become a single, I tried to set goals, you know, in my whole life. I've always was goal-orientated.
Yeah.
And at that time, wherever you went in America, people say, "What do you do for a living?" You say, "I'm a stand-up comedian." The next question out of their mouth was, "Oh, yeah? Have you ever been on Johnny Carson?" And they hadn't been on Johnny Carson in the eyes of America. You just weren't a comedian. You might want to be one. You might going to be one, but you weren't one now. So Johnny Carson was on the West Coast. Freddie Prinze went on The Tonight Show, and after his first appearance, he got a sitcom the next day.
Wow.
You know, so everybody knew that show had that much power. 28 to 30 million people a night watched that show, plus all the talent agents and all the buyers in the agencies in Las Vegas. They all watched that show. And at that time, comedy was like the rock and roll of the 70s. So we all came out this way. You know, I came out here and struggled. I had a wife and three kids back in Chicago. I ended up being broke out here. I ended up sleeping in an old car, a Nash Rambler. It was up on blocks. I mean, wow. It's a long story. I wrote about it in a book. And I'd hitchhike up and down Sunset Boulevard every night, begging to work for free at the comedy store, because that was a place, it was the only comedy club in town at that time. And so that was a place where The Tonight Show would come and see you. All the talent coordinators went there to look at the new comedians. So then you had to pass the audition for the owner, Mitzi Shore, you know.
Yeah.
So that took me like a month before I could finally get even an audition and finally got on The Tonight Show finally got on The Comedy Store and finally wooed the people from The Tonight Show to come and see me after about 6 months. And then I finally got on. I auditioned one night with a comedy team called Bauman Esten, a new kid named Billy Crystal, and me.
Oh, wow.
You know, but I don't know whatever happened to Billy Crystal, but I'm on the Nightlife.
You're on Nightlife.
Big time.
Conrad, get Billy Crystal on the blower. Take a memo. We'll reach out to him. We'll drop Tom Dreesen's name. Tom, this is so great. So you talked about your book, Let's talk about that a little bit. It's available on Amazon, still standing. My journey from the streets and saloons to the stage and Sinatra. Boy, what a run that is. How do you even have, that's a mini series. I can't even imagine trying to squeeze that all into a book.
Well, what was it? I do a 90-minute show now around the country called The Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh. You know, it's a 90-minute show where I do stand-up comedy, of course, and then I segue over to a bar and I tell the audience, I tell a funny story at the bar, and on the bar is a bottle of Jack Daniels, which was Frank's Make a Choice. I tell a funny story, and all the when the audience is laughing, all the lights go out, and on the screen, Frank Sinatra is singing to me, you know, it's 2:45, there's no one in the place except you and me, like, I'm behind the bar, and he's singing to the bartender. When he gets to the chorus, he goes off screen, and the spotlight hits me, and now the audience is in a bar with me, and I've come home. And I tell them the first time I heard that voice, I was 10 years old, I was shining shoes in the bars in Harvey, Illinois. South side of Chicago.
Jeez.
And then I take the audience from the little boy hearing Sinatra on the jukebox in Harvey, Illinois, to one day carrying his coffin out of a church in Beverly Hills, California. So I take them on that journey. You know, with a lot of laughs, a lot of stand-up comedy and stuff. And then the Tim and Tom years and me doing the Tonight Shows and touring with Sammy Davis for years, touring with, you know, different artists, Smokey Robinson and Natalie Cole and Gladys Knight and the Pips, Frankie Avalon, James Darren, all these singers, Mac Davis. I was touring with a lot of singers. And then eventually I toured with Frank Sinatra, you know. It was supposed to be for a week and it turned into 14 years, 45, 50 cities a year. Staying up with him till dawn because he never went to bed till the sun came up. He was nocturnal. And that's what the book is about. And that's what my one-man show is about, too.
Okay, so the book is called Still Standing, My Journey from Streets and Saloons to the Stage and Sinatra. You can buy it on Amazon. And I'm telling you, folks, what Tom is telling you right now is the thumbnail. The stories, Tom, the stories I've heard about you are so great. And we talked about them a little bit on the phone, but check out this book, I'm telling you. And for those of you who don't, maybe who are younger, like Sinatra, Tom, I'll just tell you, when I moved to LA, I think I'd lived there a year or two. And when Sinatra died, there was a Skywriter airplane and it said, thanks, Frank, or something like that. And it hit me while I was driving in the valley. I said, wow, I lived in the same town as Frank Sinatra. That's as close as I got to him, but it was still like a cool thing, you know? What's it like knowing him aside from just the stage persona and just being friends?
At first, when you tour with somebody of that magnitude, you know, I was doing shows with Smokey Robinson or Sammy Davis. There'd be 3,000 people in the audience, 3,500. With Frank Sinatra, 20,000 in huge arenas around the country.
Yeah.
20,000 seaters. In Hawaii, 40,000 people. It was an outdoor show. So it's a totally different dynamic for a comedian to go to that large of an audience. You have, there's certain little tricks you have to learn to bring the audience into you. And by the way, none of them came to see you. They came to see the guy that's following you. So it was really a challenge. But, you know, when I first started touring with him, he was the boss of this tour. And that's how he was treated. He was the boss of this tour. He knew everybody's job, and you better know yours. Because every night, I don't care how much you want to party, come showtime, it's a command performance.
Yeah.
And he expected everybody to be ready and be as good as him, you know, to be up for the show. But then as time went by, as years went by, we became friends and we started hanging out together. I'd hang out with him till the wee small hours of the morning. And then toward the end of his life, he was more like a father to me. He gave me a lot of fatherly advice. And those days, you know, when we became real good friends, I would stay at his house in Rancho Mirage. It was a compound, a big compound.
Okay.
And he had bungalows on the outer perimeters for his guests. The bungalows were called New York, New York, Strangers in a Night, Tender Trap, My Way, named after his songs. And his house guests would be Gregory Peck and his wife, Veronique. It would be Kirk Douglas and his wife, Ann. It'd
gosh.
Be Jack Lemmon and his wife, Felicia. It'd be Sidney Poitier and his wife. It'd be, Robert Wagner and Joe St. John, and Admiral Shepard. It was all these interesting people, you know. But he would come and get me out of my bungalow like 3:30 in the morning and say, let's go take a ride, Tommy. And I'd drive around the desert with him till dawn. And those times, and we were alone in the car, he wasn't the great Frank Sinatra, and I wasn't this comedian. He was a kid from Hoboken in New Jersey, and I was a kid from Harvey, Illinois. And that's what we talked about, the neighborhood growing up, parents, you know, those things. We became, you know, just two guys from the neighborhood. One time a New York Times guy said to him, why do you keep Tom Dreesen with you? We were in a restaurant in New York. And he walked by and he said, why do you keep Tom Dreesen with you? He was joking. Frank said, you mean besides the fact that he's funny? And the guy said, yeah. And he said, well, if I'm a saloon singer, and I am, then Tommy's a saloon comedian. By that, I mean, we're just a couple of neighborhood guys.
Oh, that's
and I've always
great.
Treasured that quote, you know, a couple of neighborhood guys. that's what we were when we were in the car alone, you know.
Wow. That is really cool. I'm trying to think, Tom, what I want to ask you next, if I want to go. Tell us about your Chicago. You got a big date coming up. You're going to record something new in Chicago on May 11th. Talk about that a little bit.
On May 11th, I'm doing a thing from Harvey to Hollywood, you know, in Chicago at the Den Theater. But it's going to be this journey of me touring with Frank Sinatra as well. And it's comedy and then great storytelling and stuff. But and it's got, knock on wood, it's got rave reviews. The Chicago Tribune gave it rave reviews. And it's doing real well. I do it around the country. But now I'm coming home to Chicago to do it May 11th at a theater called the Den Theater in Wicker Park on 1330 North Milwaukee.
Oh, perfect.
And what's good about it is I'm doing it at 4:00 in the afternoon. So there's a great restaurant right outside of it where everybody's going to, who buy tickets, are going to go there for dinner, and I'll do a meet and greet in the restaurant afterward. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's a great event. Wow, that sounds like fun. Okay, so we have to do a quick thing here, Tom, but I want to ask you before we take a quick break, how on earth, where did you start, like, with Sinatra? Where did he see you somewhere?
You know what happened? It was by being glib. I was working with Smokey Robinson at Caesars in Lake Tahoe, and Frank was appearing next door at Harris. And I had worked Harris many times. So I called the maitre d' and said, I want to come over on one night. And I don't know why I picked that one night. We were there for a week. But that particular night, I came off stage at Caesars, and I rushed over to Harris, which is only one casino over. I didn't even change out of my stage clothes, and I was running into the main showroom to see Frank because I had seen him perform before, and I didn't want to miss his opening. He created more excitement walking to the microphone than most people did with their whole act. You know, when he walked out, and I didn't want to miss that. It was just incredible. So I was rushing into the showroom, and the vice president of Harris Hotel saw me, and he called me over, and he was talking to a big heavyset guy with a cigar. And he said, Tommy, this is Mickey Rudin. And I recognized the name. That was Frank Sinatra's lawyer. And he said, Mickey, this is Tom Dreesen. And I think Tom would make a great opening act with Frank Sinatra. And the lawyer got a pained expression on his face like he heard that a million times. And he winked at the vice president, but I caught the wink. He said, hey, kid, if I gave you a week with Frank, would you want more than $50,000? I said, Mr. Rudin, put it this way. If you gave me a week with Frank, would you want more than $50,000?
That's Tom Dreesen. When we come back, I'm going to ask Tom about his Harry Carey Frank Sinatra story. That's coming up next on Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe, hanging with Tom Dreesen on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I gotta get away, gotta get away. I don't
know where to go. It's hopeless, so I guess I'll leave it alone.
Hey, bro, what's happening?
Hey, blood, what it is? Who's this dude?
That's Rick Jesperson.
You're not black.
No, I work for a black magazine.
I didn't know you'd be white.
I thought this was a black station.
It's a white station.
I'm white. My magazine's black.
I'm black.
Let's talk.
About what?
How about race?
I don't think that much about it.
Me neither. I'm the only person of another color at the magazine. Do you have any idea what it's like to be that much in the minority?
Must be rough.
It's kind of weird, though, everybody being one color and me being another. It gets in the way sometimes.
How bad?
Like, we got a couple of really good-looking girls at the magazine. Whenever I'm around them, I feel like I always have to be careful, you know?
I'll be darned.
I feel funny when I put my hand on their shoulder. I mean, that kind of thing. Anyway, the point is, I've really gotten to know and love these people. But I realize that people are people, and you are who you are, and you link yourself to people you love, no matter what you are or what they are.
That was a weird fade. That was Tom Dreesen on WKRP in Cincinnati, playing opposite his old comedy partner, Tim Reed. Tom, how come you never, I mean, you did act, you were in a lot of stuff, but did you ever pursue acting?
Yeah, I've studied acting in Chicago. I studied acting in L.A. I've done a lot of movies. You know, I've been in films, but I never enjoyed. You know, I did Murder, She Wrote in Columbo. You know, I was in Trouble with the Curve with Clint Eastwood, who was a good buddy of mine. And anyway, yeah, but I love stand-up comedy. You know, acting is fun, but it's a long, drawn-out affair. Stand-up comedy is so exciting, and I'd rather be a stand-up comedian than anything else. And I have been one for 55 years.
Yeah, I think you're doing okay. So, Tom, you told me on the phone when we spoke a couple weeks ago about a story about Frank Sinatra and Harry Carey drinking. I would love it if you would share that story again on the show.
Well, even every year now, I sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Wrigley Field, and I throw out the first pitch. So in those days, I would go up in a booth with Harry Carey and be interviewed by him and hang out with him some nights on Rush Street in Chicago. And, he could drink like no one could drink. So one night, Frank Sinatra stayed up till dawn. I put them two together, at the pump room in Chicago to see who could outdrink who. At 4:30 in the morning, Harry threw his hands up and said, "You got me, Frank. I'm going to bed."
Oh, man, what a fun thing to witness. Like, do you ever just, sit at home at night, Tom, and go, man, the things I've seen and done in my life, it must be fun to reflect, but you said you're goal-oriented, and I'm sure you still are. What do you still want to accomplish in your career?
We're doing a documentary right now in my life, come from my book, Still Standing, and that. And then, I love doing this one-man show around the country. I'm going to try to bring it to Milwaukee here at some time, too. But I like doing that one-man show, The Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh. It's a 90-minute show. Yeah. And then also I give motivation talks for corporate America and to universities and the students on four subjects: perception, visualization, self-talk, and develop a sense of humor. And I elaborate on those points. So I enjoy motivating people, too. I love life. And I like to play a lot of golf. And if you got some money, Pete, and a real high handicap, I'll play with you.
I'll just hand you the money, Tom. Why don't we do that? That would just save us both a lot of time, and the course would be in better shape when I'm done.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, so a couple more minutes here with Tom Dreesen. Tom, you are a huge Cub fan. I spent so many days of my summers. We live a couple miles west of Wrigley Field where I grew up, and my mom would put us all in the bus, five kids, and take us to Ladies' Day at Wrigley. And we would enter right across from the fire station. I probably saw you there throwing out the first pitch when I was a kid. What was it like in 2016 for you when they finally won the World Series, being a Cub? I mean, you posed naked in a Cub hat. That I think you trump everybody else with their Cub fandom.
Well, that's because Dave Letterman threw my Cub hat on the floor one night on the show. I gave him a gift, a Cub hat. He threw it on the floor. So my brother's a photographer. He took a picture of me naked backside, with a cat with a hat on. Cub hat, and I sent it to David, said, "You can have everything I got, but don't touch my Cub hat."
I love it.
So that became in 2016, I waited my whole childhood. I used to do routines about the Cubs, about how bad they were and all that stuff. I once got in Sports Illustrated, I had the joke of the year. I said, when I was growing up, I used to pray that the Cubs and the White Sox would merge so Chicago would only have one bad team. So anyhow, I was at three of the World Series games at Wrigley Field, but when they went to Cleveland, and that night I was doing a show in Palm Springs, and I was up in my suite. When they won, I could not talk. I made my living talking. I'm a talker, but my daughter called me and I couldn't talk. It was all those years of all those jokes, and all I could think of was all the people I know who lived and died with the Cubs and passed away and didn't live to see that day.
Yeah.
To see that day, I have aunts and uncles and buddies and stuff like that. So, I was tongue-tied. I mean, it was just the most amazing feeling in the world.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with you. Hey, I got one more question for you, Tom. What we do on the show, we talk about movies and TV and what we're watching and binge-watching and cringe-watching. When you're done performing, what does Tom Dreesen watch? Can you recommend anything?
You aren't going to believe what I'm going to tell you, but I love going back to out here, it's Channel 54. I watch Mayberry. I watch Don Knotts.
Oh, nice.
I watch Andy Griffith's show. I watch, I watch those kind of shows, the Carol Burnett show. I just love that era and that time. So that's what I do, And then I also go to comedy clubs here. I try out new material at the Comedy Store, at the Comedy Chateau, at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, at Flappers in Burbank. I go there and I'll do a show, and then I'll watch the new comedians that are coming up. And I really enjoy that, watching the young guys and girls that are starting out in stand-up comedy.
Well, Tom, you were so nice to me when I started, and I've never met anybody who has a bad word to say about you. You're a gentleman, and you're so encouraging of other comics, and I just think you pay it forward, and it's just great karma. And I cannot thank you enough for being on the show tonight.
Oh, thanks, Pete. I enjoy it. Well, let's do it again, and let's do like 2 or 3 hours.
You know? Absolutely. Hey, listen. Next time,
and no commercials.
Right. Next time you came on. Next time you come on. I found the WKRP clip. I also saw on IMDb Pro that you did a Baywatch. I am going to find the Baywatch clip with Tom Dreesen in it. We'll play that next time you come back.
Oh, that was a great. That was one of my favorite roles. We'll talk about that some other time. And Murder She Wrote too. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, you were on that a few times. Yeah. All right. Yeah, well, we'll still have lots to talk about, but we'll, that sounds good. We'll save some of it. Good luck with the recording. I hope the book keeps selling, and I hope we do this again soon, buddy.
Thanks, Pete. Good talking to you.
Always. You too, Tom. That's legendary comedian Tom Dreesen. And, you know, the whole time I'm talking to Tom and he's telling me, talking about Sinatra, I'm like, I can't even imagine knowing Frank Sinatra just to have a normal conversation. Like, I've ever met Sinatra, or when I've met icons, the conversation was so basic. It's like, whatever, pleasantries. I can't even imagine having an actual conversation with Frank Sinatra. That's incredible. You know who Frank Sinatra is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Heard of him? Heard his music?
I've heard his music.
Are you folks fans?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess my whole family, you know, my dad's side is really a fan of that.
It's great stuff. I know you just found The Office recently.
Yeah, I've been watching that every single night. I'm almost done with season 3 already.
It's pretty addicting. I know, it's awesome. Well, you'll find Sinatra's music too. You'll have to go back a little further, but you'll find it. So tomorrow night we are in Madison. That will be fun. Amir Kakaros will be on. Kirk Bangstad, Ed Anderson, and Terry Barr will be on Nightlight tomorrow night talking music. Coming up next on Nightlight, an actual maestro joins our show. This is Pete Schwabe and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
What's hot from Wisconsin to Hollywood? Listen to Nightlight with Pete Schwabe podcast on civicmedia.us. You can always listen through Spotify, Apple Podcast, or the Civic Media app. Take Nightlight with Pete Schwabe anywhere you go. Once again, here is your host, Pete Schwabe.
Welcome back to Nightlight. Great to have you with me on this Thursday night. So much fun going on this week on Nightlight. Next week as well, I'll be down at the Wisconsin Film Festival starting tomorrow and be introducing films and hosting Q&As on Saturday and Sunday. If you are around, please don't hesitate to stop by, say hello, and we will be back again next week with another great round of shows. Tomorrow night on the show, Terry Barr joins us after a brief hiatus, Conrad.
Yes,
she's back.
Yeah, and she's got a song for us.
She's got a song for us. Kirk Bangstad will be on the show tomorrow. He's got a song for us in a new room opening in Madison. He will be in studio with me tomorrow night in Madison from our studios down there. Right now, I am very excited to welcome my next guest. He is joining us. I don't know where he is, but he is associated, at least professionally, with the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra and has a really cool event that he's here to talk about on Saturday. He is Maestro Alexander Pratt. Welcome, Maestro.
Hi. I am most definitely in La Crosse. I know that the Chicago Symphony Orchestra just hired as its next music director a 28-year-old who's going to supposedly handle that job while also handling Oslo, Paris, and Amsterdam. But I am in La Crosse, Wisconsin, to conduct the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra. Thank you very much. Oh.
Well, listen, I looked at your resume. What do you prefer? Boy. Should I call you Alexander or Maestro? I've never actually willingly or knowingly talked to a maestro before.
No, just don't call me. You don't have to call me Maestro. Call me Alexander, but for goodness sake. Don't call me Maestro. Please.
That's kind of cool to call you Maestro, but I'll call you Alexander. That works too.
All right, that's fine.
You've got quite an extensive resume, so I think add La Crosse to one of the numerous places you've conducted, big and small.
Well, I basically have, I mean, that's very kind of you. Thank you. I'm flattered. But I have actually a fairly simple life in which I, from September to June, I devote myself entirely to the upper Midwest. If you drew a line from like Chicago to La Crosse, that is my universe. I spend the summers in a place called Woodstock, New York, which I think you've probably heard of, where I run a summer music festival and I recharge my batteries. But basically, I am in this kind of Chicago, Wisconsin world, which is, along with the Northeast, is absolutely my favorite part of America. I love this place very much, and I'm really very, I could not be happier than to be the maestro, as they say, in La Crosse with the La Crosse Symphony.
You know, I'll be honest, you could do, Chicago is my hometown, and Wisconsin is my adopted home. Pardon?
I've lived in Chicago for 30 years.
Yeah. So. And it's,
I love it. It's a great city. Great
this is
city.
My, this in Wisconsin, my adopted hometown. So, or mm-hmm. home state. So, you know, you could do a lot worse. There's two wonderful places.
It's a great combination. Seriously. Yeah. Really great combination.
So you've got, I want to talk more about your resume in just a minute, but you've got a pretty big event coming
but
up.
Enough about me. Let's talk about my program.
The program. And then we get back to your career, which I
Send
do find fascinating.
Me. Really well. Thank you. I'm glad somebody finds this fascinating.
I think you're doing okay.
All right, I'm doing okay.
Tell us about, I want to get the title right. It's Music at, not Music at the Movies. I just had it pulled up here and now it's escaping me. Spring Pops, the ultimate movie night. Is that what it's called?
The ultimate. It's the ultimate movie night. Yes, it is. No, it's really, it's, you know, there's a lot of great movie music now going back. Gosh, almost 100 years. So we have great film music, but this is just one that really kind of presses all the right buttons in the kind of recent kind of repertoire. we've got a couple of recent things like Pirates of the Caribbean and nice. Batman Dark Knight Rises. We've got a couple of now kind of becoming oldies, Apollo 13 and the great, very, very touching score, the James Horner score for Titanic. And then the rest of the program is devoted to, I mean, the person who is truly the great maestro of American music for the movies of our time. Of course, I'm referring to John Williams, maestro, truly a maestro, Maestro John Williams, who recently celebrated his 90th birthday and still very active as a composer and a conductor. And we're going to do some of his really his greatest hits like Superman and E.T. and Jaws and Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which is an amazingly difficult, complicated score, actually.
Really?
And then we're going to wrap up with, of course, we're going to do an extended, the full concert or symphonic suite from his music for Star Wars. So, is really, truly a classic these days. So it's a really great evening of truly, truly, to use another overused word, classic music for the movies.
Yeah, that's a boy, that's a great show.
It is a great show. Thank
so you.
You
do all that. All right. Are any of these, let me ask you this, are which composers or maestros or music conductors are your idols or who did you look up to when you were sort of finding your way?
Well, I grew up in a wonderful world in which my parents were not musicians, but art and music and theater and the movies were everywhere. And so I grew up in a lot of the classic Hollywood film scores, those amazing scores from, you know, what we call the golden age of Hollywood in the 30s and 40s, and like the score for, you know, Casablanca, if you know that great movie, and those scores that Korngold wrote for the Robin Hood movies, which are very much literally the precursor to what John Williams did with Star Wars. And then I think I was always a Wisconsin, an upper Midwesterner. My favorite composer growing up was Sibelius, Jean Sibelius, who's the great, great national composer of Finland, who was active in the early 20th century. He's one of the great late romantics, but his music is so expressive. It's like film music. It's like movie music. He just didn't know it. Like it's so massive in scope and so romantic, and I love Sibelius a lot. And of course, I love the old guys, Bach and Mozart and all those. But and I love a lot of contemporary voices today. And I love doing this spring Pops concert every year in La Crosse. The rest of the season is mainly the classical repertoire, but for which we also get full houses and the great, you know, the great masters. And but it's great to do this Pops concert every spring. And you know, this is really like a springboard because we're going to branch out into, you know, we've never done, well, actually this past summer, we finally dipped our toe in the water with like 70s rock, and we want to go into like 80s rock, and because there's some really great symphonic charts for that.
Yeah.
So I just, for me, it's like, and in that realm, it's just like the movie music we're doing now. It's not necessarily, is it classical? Is it contemporary? Is it pop? Is it, it's like, is it good music? And are the chart, as we call them, the charts, are the materials professional? And honestly, like if you're working with a great popular artist and you're, and the materials they bring you, the scores and the parts, everything is really good and quality, and you know how to, you know how they work. It's a great experience. It's really about making the music live. It's really about the artistry, the magic of live performance, which I think it's the only possible blessing of the COVID-19 thing is that we all kind of learn the hard way how much we missed, how much we've been taking live arts for granted.
Absolutely. And that is the voice of Alexander Platt. He is the maestro and conductor for the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra, which is putting on a great program. For those of you in the La Crosse area, it's Saturday night at the Viterbo Arts Center, Music of the Movies. And he is nice enough to join us here tonight on Nightlight. So, okay, I have to share a story. I'm one of these guys who I have kind of an eclectic music taste. I grew up, my dad was this classical music nut.
Wow.
And I grew up with all that stuff. And I used to have dreams that my dad would pull me aside and go, Pete, I actually like rock and roll. And then we really bonded. But be that as it may, I fell in love with like Beethoven. I heard it in Saturday Night Fever. And I'm like, wait a minute, they can't play this.
Yes, you know
this
that.
Is a classical.
Right.
So,
yeah, I remember that.
And growing up with the Boston Pops and all that, like, it's such great music.
Yes.
How do you, when you do the show this weekend, mm-hmm. will you have an influx where there'll be some young people? How do you expose younger people? Not that that's your job, but to this great music that they should find,
No, it's totally my job. I mean, I just got, just an hour ago, I was teaching a conducting class at Viterbo University, which is along with UW La Crosse, one of our two major schools here, and I was working with a room full of young people on a classic work, the choral repertory, and these kids were totally into it and curious and wanting to learn, and I had a great time. And so that's one of the beautiful things about La Crosse, because as you know, we're a big college town here, so it's kind of organic, really, that like young people would attend concerts of the orchestra, and it just works. So I find it very, it's a totally natural thing to say, hey, come to this concert and see what we do. And we've had great success in that realm.
That's so,
so
cool.
So for me, it's not a fake, it's not a forced thing at all. And, you know, a great conductor days gone by used to say that, you know, everybody loves classical music. They just don't know it.
Oh,
and
that's great.
I think that's true.
That's great. And as a, coming from a film background as a writer and filmmaker, movie scores to me are like some of the stuff I just put on and I'll walk around and I'll have it on my headphones. You know, it just takes you to a place, you know, it's so great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So for people that are attending on Saturday night, there's an added bonus. They get to hang out with you a little bit after. I understand coffee and cookies are the fare of the evening.
The secret's out. The secret's out. Yes, yes, they can. Yes, absolutely. I'm in the lobby seconds after I have alighted off the stage. Mere minutes. It's not seconds. I'm there. So
I think you deserve a little breather.
Of course, La Crosse has an active nightlife scene, and I can be spotted at various venues.
You like to hit the local taverns after the show? Is that what I'm hearing?
Okay. Drinking beverages and quoting famous authors.
Oh, yes. I love. What does a maestro drink after a show that blows the roof off the dump?
Blows the roof off.
Sorry, I'm going back to my stand-up days. Eva I said that. Okay.
I won't tell. Don't worry. I won't tell a soul. We got some wonderful places. Like there's a wonderful French place called Le Chateau, which has a very fabulous late night bar scene. And I can be spotted there quaffing, a good Bordeaux. Hey,
wow, nice.
What is wrong? I say, Sal, what is wrong with a good Bordeaux?
You don't have to convince me. What you do in your free time is totally
none of your business.
Yeah, right.
We're just here to talk about the music.
That's
and the
right.
Repertoire.
So how much time do you spend in lacrosse typically in a given year, Alexander?
I spend many, many weeks. I mean, several months worth of time.
Okay.
You added it all up. And I have my other bride is the another wonderful orchestra in Wisconsin, which is based in Waukesha County, called the Wisconsin Philharmonic. I really should be living in Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm actually now that COVID's over and other things are, I'm kind of going to make the move to Madison fairly soon in the next few months.
Make your life easy.
Nothing against Chicago, but I've lived there 30 years, and I want to be equidistant between my two, just an easy drive from my two main orchestras. So that is absolutely what I want. And because this business is full of conductors, usually with a foreign accent, I'm so happy to be here. I look forward. I can't wait to participate in the wonderful community. Yeah. Right.
All right. This is my guest is Alexander Platt. He's a maestro. My first maestro I've talked to knowingly, and we're having a good time here. We'll have a couple more minutes with him coming up next. I want to ask him if he saw the movie Maestro. That's coming up next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
He's trying to tell me something, but we'll have to stop thinking about it. I don't know. I doubt it. Subterranean by design. I wonder what I would find if I met you. Let my eyes caress you until I meet the thought of Mrs. Princess, who often wonder what makes her work. I guess I'll leave that question to the experts, assuming that there are some out there. They're probably alone, solitaire. I can remember when I caught up with a pet.
Welcome back. Be doing the show tomorrow night from Madison, Wisconsin. Be sure to tune in for some in-studio fun, lots of music. Terry Barr will be with us, as she often is on Friday nights, and I will be there Monday night as well. Johnny Beaner will be on the show, Madison comedian, very funny guy. Right now, we're talking with Alexander Platt. He is a music conductor who will be leading the way on Saturday night, April 6th, at the Viterbo Arts Center. And I've lost it again, Alexander. It's Music of the Movies, I believe is the actual title.
The Ultimate Movie Night.
The Ultimate Movie Night. That's right. Please don't tell Eva I said blow the roof off the dump. That's an old stand-up comedy phrase, because those are the kind of places I worked. The Viterbo Arts Center is gorgeous and beautiful, and it's going to be a really fun night. And people get to have cookies.
We have a great hall. We have a world-class concert hall at Viterbo University. We really do. Many of the many blessings of being in La Crosse.
Are audiences different in a place like La Crosse than Chicago or Madison or Woodstock? Or is it pretty much people that are there are enthusiasts and they're all great, or are they different?
No, actually, I'm really glad, seriously glad you asked that question, because the La Crosse audience is very special, and they know when to like hoot and holler, and then they know when to be totally silent. And there is this incredible experience that I very frequently have in La Crosse, where I know that I've earned my fee, because like it's the middle of a symphony, which is in like three or four movements, and we're in between the movements, and there is total silence from the audience, but you can physically feel their participation.
Wow.
It's like a religious experience. It's just incredible. And it's like people, again, as I was saying, the magic of live performance. There's nothing, I don't care what they do with AI, there's nothing that will replicate this. And they, and lacrosse, I really mean it, because I say this to them all the time. It really is one of the great audiences, and they just, the love that they send us over the footlights in this,
wow,
this tacit way, it's beautiful. No, the, and then, yeah, at the end, boy, they, yeah, they can kind of, you know, hoot and holler with the best of them and, you know, standing ovations and all that, but they really participate. It's one of the great audiences. I really mean that.
If you are in the La Crosse area, check it out. I can't stress enough, having been to several really great venues where the acoustics are so good and the music, like there's something about string music that when it's played perfectly in a facility where the acoustics are perfect, you just feel it in your bones.
Yeah, and we also have a really great string section, wonderful people, many of whom are from Madison, actually, and La Crosse, and a few from the Twin Cities, but we've been developing that. We have a beautiful string section.
Oh, very nice.
Over the years. Yeah,
very do you have special. A favorite other than, I mean, the Viterbo Fine Arts Center sound, or Viterbo Fine Arts Center, yeah, sounds amazing, yeah. But do you have a favorite venue of places you've been? You've been all over the world.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons I'm looking forward to establishing myself in Madison is, you know, the Overture Center.
Yeah,
Madison. That is an amazing. That is a beautiful, beautiful
sure
hall. I can't wait to kind of just as an audience member to take in some concerts there. So we have some wonderful concert halls here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, we sure do. I have to ask you, did you see Maestro?
I've seen it 3 times.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, the first time I loved it. Second time I hated it. The third time I loved it again. I'm just so grateful that a major Hollywood star has, now this is the second movie, because of course a year before we had Cate Blanchett in the movie Tar about this semi-fictional, brilliant woman conductor. For the second time in as many years, we have a major Hollywood star, you know, making it into a vehicle, this movie about a conductor, about a classical musician, just when we think classical music is dead and buried, we have these major Hollywood movies about them. And I think there's a reason for that, because again, something in classical music that you don't feel anywhere else. And I think the movie, I wish it had spent more time concentrating on some of the amazing musical moments. A lot of us in the business have, you know, carped about that, like all these great moments in Bernstein's career, but you know, you can only do so much in one movie. And I thought it was a very beautiful, very moving film. I actually studied with Leonard Bernstein late in his life. So that kind of final scene when he's teaching at Tanglewood, I literally was in the room for that. I was in the room. So I have a personal experience with that. And Bernstein was incredible. There's once a century you get someone like that. And I just try to replicate a little tiny way what he was able to do. So I feel very humbled that I was able to study with him very briefly there. So it's a beautiful movie. You know, it's mainly about his very complicated personal life.
Yeah. But
also about how he really was just this high priest of music. And as he said in the movie, you know, I love music and I love people. And that was him. He loved music and he loved people.
I agree with you. And I wish they would have kind of shifted a little bit. His personal life is part of the film. It's a biopic. I get that. But I would have loved to, like you said, have seen more of those musical moments, or the moment when it clicked, or when he had a revelation. And there's some of that in there, but it would have been nice, given who he is, to have a little more of that, I think.
I definitely could have used more of that. But, you know, there we are. And I'm just grateful that it happened. And I keep hoping that maybe it's a springboard for another movie about more of his, because there's just so much that happened. And he really was literally the first great American conductor, born and raised in America. They had all been Europeans up until that time.
That's so cool. And that's so cool you had that experience with him.
I'm very grateful for that.
I can't thank you enough for your time tonight, Alexander. I wish you luck with the event on Saturday and with your travels. And please don't be a stranger. Come back and talk to us on Nightlight anytime you want.
It'd be my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. You got it. Break a leg. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Okay.
So much. Okay. Bye-bye.
That's Alexander Platt from the La Crosse Symphony. Check out the show if you're in the area, April 6th. That's Saturday night. You can meet the conductor afterwards too for coffee and cookies, and maybe even run into him at a tavern having a nice glass of wine. He sounds like a really fun guy to hang with. All right, Conrad, did we learn anything tonight?
I think we did.
I learned a little more about the word maestro. I feel a little better about that because I didn't know, like, if it's like doctor, do I call him that? And he sounded like a really cool guy. He's like, you probably should call him that, but anyway, it was great.
Yeah.
All right. How are we doing on time?
Well, we got about around 30 seconds.
Good Lord. I better wrap this up. All right. We'll be live tomorrow night for Madison and Monday. So great to have you with me tonight. I'd like to thank Tom Dreesen, Emily Alperin, Maestro Alexander Platt. We'll be back tomorrow night with more Nightlight. I'm Pete Schwab. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good night, Wisconsin.